This podcast is produced on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabeg, Haudenosaunee, Wendat, Cree, and other Indigenous peoples. We are mindful of broken covenants and the need to reconcile with all our relations. Together may we care for this land and each other, drawing on the strength of our mutual history of nation building through peace and friendship, being mindful of the ancestors and generations to come. Welcome to the Intersection Hub podcast, where we are making connections, fostering collaborations, and building community through candid conversations. I'm your host, Kimberly McKenzie, and I'm so glad you found us. Today, we get personal. If you are secretly living a life in an unhappy relationship that is full of shame, or if you are in recovery from something similar, then this episode is for you. Today, we pull back the curtain on the personal life of Sam LaPrade. Sam's resilience, grit, strength, and the beautiful green eyes of her daughter have helped her overcome massive hurdles to build what is now a resonant life. As a radio broadcaster and professional fundraiser, Sam works closely with her community to give voice to new ideas, tough topics, and philanthropy. She has a massive portfolio of work that spans over three decades in fundraising, media, and municipal politics. Over a 32-year period, Sam has raised money for important charities in her community, such as the Ottawa Hospital Foundation, the Ottawa Humane Society, the Ottawa Mission Foundation. She is also a fundraising consultant and helps nonprofit and charity organizations engage with donors to maximize the impact of the important work they're doing every day. Through donor data analytics, fundraising and stewardship reports, board training, and fundraising audits, Sam helps local, national, and international organizations with their fundraising strategy. Sam also helps small and medium-sized organizations to recruit for important roles such as development director and fundraising manager. But here's the thing, Sam is also the creator and host of An Hour to Give on City News 101.1 Ottawa and City News 95.7 in Halifax. This radio show highlights nonprofit organizations and philanthropy. And on July 5th, 2021, the Sam LaPrade Show was launched on City News 101 Ottawa. This daily radio show airs from 12 to 2 p.m. and is an opportunity to feature the stories that matter to the residents of the Ottawa Valley. Sam also covers breaking news to ensure listeners are kept up to date with their national and global issues. Whoops! But here's the thing. In addition to all of that, she is also a stand-up comedian and is living a joyous and abundant life. But it hasn't always been this way. In this episode, Sam gets deeply personal about her setbacks and the breakup of her marriage, her second marriage. If you are caught up in or recovering from a dysfunctional relationship, this episode will help inspire you to know that you are not alone and that you can get through challenging times and become wildly successful, just like Sam is. So please join me in welcoming Sam LaPrade to the Hub. Sam, I am so happy to have you here in conversation at the Intersection. Thank you for coming and joining us in the Hub.
Well, it's my pleasure. I appreciate the invite. Thank you.
Well, it's selfish on my part because we haven't had a chance to spend a whole lot of time together in the last couple of years. Things have been pretty hectic for you and for me, but it's nice to share space together now. And I thought maybe we would get started. Everybody's heard your official bio and everything, but maybe we'll just start with a little bit of your origin story and how you came to work in the sector.
Oh, wow. It's really quite remarkable, actually. There's a picture of me when I'm about, I think maybe 7 or 8 years old. And I'm dressed up, if you can believe it, as Olivia Newton-John. And my little buddy, who is about, you know, a foot shorter than I, we dressed him up as John Travolta. And why I think about this picture when people ask me about my story of origin in terms of the sector is because in that picture, what I'm most proud about is that I've got this big UNICEF box around my neck. Yeah. I was more excited to go door to door and collect pennies and dimes and quarters than I was to collect candy, to be honest. So I think it was always in me to become a fundraiser. I often joke that I would have been fundraising in the womb, but the prospects were low. So it was just always kind of been in me. And so when I graduated from St. Pius X here in Ottawa, you know, the opportunity was, do I go to university or do I go to college? And I applied for the public relations program at Algonquin College, and I didn't get in at first. And I was heartbroken. I didn't realize there was 900 applicants and only 28 spots. I was young. I was 17 years old.
Because at 17, the world revolves around you.
Exactly. Exactly. What do you mean I can't get in? So I contacted the dean of the program, and after writing a test, she allowed me in. And that really kickstarted my love of all things fundraising, because I was very blessed for my co-op to be with CBC Television. CBC Television, I always had an interest in being involved somehow in the media. And CBC Television allowed me to produce a telethon, help produce a telethon when I was a student. And then I went on to produce 13 telethons with them as an employee.
Wow. For Easton Fields or for who?
For the Heart Institute here in Ottawa. And some of them were for Easter Seals, but mostly Heart Institute. So it was, you know, it was really one of those moments that kind of changed my life, because I kept doing other things, because telethon time was only 4 or 5 months, right?
Right.
But I kept doing other things. So it allowed me to kind of keep my foot in the door there. CBC Radio also hired me to do a bunch of things. There was a big festival in town they asked me to do. And then it kind of evolved, and you know, I was kind of doing that, but I was also the booking agent for a modeling agency here in Ottawa. So it allowed me to kind of really be quite flexible in terms of the work that I did. And, you know, that led me to, ironically, led me to work with another radio station, which at that time was called 54 Rock. And I was Traffic Jam Sam. So it allowed me to be in the
community. Jam Sam?
Traffic Jam Sam.
Whoa.
So that was a lot of fun. It was a local rock station, had a bit of a cult following at the time, so that was fantastic. And then I had the opportunity really to work alongside some incredible people. And you know, I had worked in politics as well. I'm trying to kind of piece my story together for you, but I worked in politics as well. I was the chief of staff for the mayor of Nepean, a counselor's assistant as well. But that led me to be very involved in the community. And that's where I got my first sort of official role, if you will. And that was with the Ottawa Hospital Foundation. I worked with some incredible people there. And then that really led me to be with the Ottawa Humane Society. And where I think I really blossomed was at the Ottawa Mission. So I was at the Ottawa Mission just about a decade. And that's where I really honed the craft.
What was the secret sauce at the Ottawa Mission, do you think? Because you kind of lit up when you thought of them.
Yeah, I think, you know, not that I didn't believe in the work of the hospital, because I did, but I was doing special events there. And I, you know, it's, as you know, it's a lot of pressure. I had to raise $2.5 million with 4 special events, including a lottery and a run and a golf tournament and a gala and all the things you'd expect. But, you know, when I went to the Ottawa Mission, it felt, ironically, because it is a shelter, but it did feel like home for me. And I was allowed to spread my wings a lot there. I dabbled a little bit in the major gifts and the legacy giving. And I also did the media relations, which they had never had media relations before. Mm-hmm. So combining all those three things, it was, you know, it was a job that I worked 12 hours a day, but I really did love it. And I loved the work. I really respected the men, you know, mostly men that I was raising money for to help them transition to new lives. And I really found that, you know, it was very much a calling for me to go to the Ottawa Mission. And I left a decade later. It was time for me to move on. But, you know, I landed at the Boys and Girls Club of Ottawa, and the culture wasn't sort of, we weren't aligned very well there. So I didn't stay very long. I was only there for 15 months. And then I went to an organization that had never had a fundraiser before. And that was Ottawa Carleton Life Skills. And it was raising money for adults with developmental disabilities, which very passionate about. I loved everybody there as well. Very difficult to raise money for that sector. So I did that for a few years. And then the pull was always there because, you know, obviously with Griffin Fundraising that we launched in 2008, I was always a part-time consultant doing analytics. Mm-hmm. So the pull was always there to become a full-time consultant. Mm-hmm. And then it was, how can I make this work as a single mom? And, you know, I'll credit somebody by the name of Angela Houle, who I sat down with and really said to her, you know, what's holding me back right now is benefits. I need to buy benefits. And she's like, we'll get you some benefits. And as soon as I could kind of make that happen, then it really, everything kind of clicked from there. And I had about a 12-week ramp up. And honestly, I started 2017, October 1st. So 5 years ago. And by the time I launched, I had 5 clients.
Amazing.
And I've never looked back, never been busier, but never been happier.
Well, thank you for sharing all of that, because this sector is so full of people who kind of fall into it. It's particularly our, I hate to say generation, people our age, because now there's schools and you can choose it as a profession, but
right.
A lot of us fall into it and life away, right?
I didn't know it was something that people could make a living off of. And we still, you know, I remember meeting with somebody a couple of years ago and they said, oh my gosh, I thought everybody that worked there was like volunteering their time. You know, people just don't understand that it is a profession and that, you know, there are some really great things happening and all the volunteers are fantastic, but that it is something that warrants being full-time work and a calling, if you will.
Well, and also congratulations on your consultancy and the
success
experience there. And as well, you're doing all sorts of public events and MC, and you have a radio program, which my saboteur just turned up the volume and went, oh my gosh, you're interviewing an interviewer. I need to shut that down.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
So when you do Google Sam LaPrade, everything looks like it's rainbows, unicorns, puppies, and sunshine.
Well, of course it is, Kimberly. Yeah. What are you talking about? Yeah. Not at all. But I certainly went through a very difficult time. I made sort of a personal life choice that wasn't a good one. And I got married again. And that was a very, very, very challenging time in my life. I knew in my heart of hearts, as I look back on it, I mean, I knew I was making a mistake and hoping that it was going to correct course, but it didn't. And so that was a very difficult time because it was my second marriage, as you know, and, you know, there's something about you get divorced once and you're kind of like, okay, well, you know, that's okay. You
get divorced twice. Yeah,
exactly. And then you get divorced twice and you're thinking everyone's looking at you going, yeah, it's her. We knew it was her, you know, she's the problem. Huh? But, you know, the end result of it, to be honest with you, and I would not have said this at the time, mm-hmm. I absolutely am so happy I went through with it all and that it all happened, because I truly, and I know people say this all the time, and before I used to hear this and I go, yeah, sure. I really do. I would have gone through it all to land where I am today. Okay. I learned a lot about myself.
Can we just pause for a second and let that ring, that you would have gone through it all over again to be where you are today? So should we dive into what it was?
Sure.
And then move on to where you are now?
Yeah, absolutely.
What was it?
It was, you know, it was a relationship that I had for many, many years. It was a challenging, I'll just be honest. I mean, it was somebody that had moved from another country. So, you know, you think about that and you've got to remember, talk about intersections. There's where a lot of things intersect. So my dad was diagnosed terminal. Mm-hmm. And if anyone's ever lost a parent, they know that funny things start happening in your brain. You know, you sort of want to cling on to family. You want to cling on to things. And I wanted to cling on to him, obviously, and never let him go. But my dad was given, you know, a few months. And, you know, this person that had asked, and we had, you know, been involved with each other for a number of years, had asked before to get married, and I had said no, because it it was just very complicated, and he lived in Australia and all of that. And then when my dad was sick, I think in many cases my defenses were a little bit down, or and so I agreed to have him come to Canada and to pursue sort of a life together. And in the middle of all that, sort of the planning of all that, my mom was diagnosed with cancer.
Whew.
My mom was diagnosed with cancer on Black Friday of 2015. And on that day, you know, that was a very big day. It was just another like, oh, thank heavens you're coming. It was another like, and I'll say it, and this is like really horrible to say, but it was almost a distraction for me for what was really going on, you know.
So you have all this going on with your parents,
mm-hmm.
and it was kind of a bright light pulling you in.
Yeah. And I romanticized it. I will be very frank with you. I totally romanticized it.
Yeah.
And it should have been a romantic thing. And there was parts of it, but certainly I made it better, I think, than it really was.
Mm-hmm.
And then on, I think it was December 12th or something, my mom had a small stroke. So this was just another example of, oh my gosh, like, you know, and my dad is still sick. I've got my mom, my dad, I'm an only child, single mom, being pulled in 1,000 directions.
You needed an anchor.
That his flight was landing on Christmas Eve. You could see why I would romanticize it. Felt very much like a Hallmark movie, yeah. And all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then he arrives, and you know, he doesn't know the main street in Ottawa. He can't drive here. He can't work here. He can't do anything here. So of course, looking to me to be the everything, the connector, the driver, the, you know, I need to get a prescription. I mean, all of it, right? So, and then, you know, so then, you know, inviting him into kind of my world and introducing him to people, including my dad, obviously. And then we lose my dad on, and we were expecting it, but we lost my dad on Groundhog Day. And why I say Groundhog Day is because if you knew my father, that was his last prank on all of us. It would be, you're never going to forget me. I passed away on Groundhog Day. So I lost him on Groundhog Day. And 2 or 3 days after, these words were said to me. Listen, this house is really, really sad. I think I should go back to Australia. And I remember thinking to myself, I just lost my father. I brought you here to support me through this.
Mm-hmm.
I was heartbroken.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next thing, we sort of went through that. There was Valentine's Day and whatever. And I was devastated to lose my father. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, I know. I see. I am sorry.
Yeah. So I came home, and I think it was March 3rd. And my daughter was staying with her dad that night. And when I pulled in the driveway, it was really dark. Like the house was dark. And I thought to myself, oh, that's kind of strange. And the minute I opened that door, I knew he was gone. And that was heartbreaking for me. And I took it very personally, obviously. And timed kind of when he knew I was going to be coming home, came an email, sorry, had to go back to Australia, couldn't do it anymore. So I knew right then, if I'm being really honest, I knew I had been used. I knew that it wasn't good. And so I went through a very difficult couple of weeks. I lost weight, which anyone that knows me will know that that's a big thing. So I lost weight. But then, you know, then some sunshine came.
Okay.
And so as the sunshine started came, he wanted to come back. He said he had made a big mistake. And so, like a donkey, I agreed to have him back, and we got married.
Wait, because I thought that because there was a motorcycle outside and I got distracted. I thought I missed the marriage part. Like I thought, oh, she went to that awfully quickly. So he left you at your darkest time.
Yeah.
And
so he said he was a mistake. He was, you know, it was the winter. He wasn't used to the winter, and there was lots, you know, whole list of reasons why he said that it was a mistake and he wanted to come back. So he came back in May. We went ahead because I had canceled everything for the wedding. We went ahead and got married on June 23rd. And quite honestly, that day I even knew I was making a mistake.
What was that moment? Tell me about that.
That moment was I called him and it was about maybe 2 hours before we were going to get married. And I just wanted to say like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we've done this after all these years and everything we've been through. I can't believe we're going to do this. And he's like, are you finished? I need to get the kids and get there. Like, are you finished? But wow. So that was a big kind of moment for me. I'm like, yeah, I'm making a mistake.
But, you know, there's pride. He had already gone back. You know, you'd already been through so much. How could you tell your guests that the wedding they came for wasn't happening?
And we had people, of course, come from Australia. So there's, you know, all you're thinking about is their airfare and all that stuff. So
I'm really grateful to you for sharing this story and being so vulnerable. I appreciate it so much because I know that there are other women who are listening to this going, oh yeah, I felt that humiliation and that shame. And thank you so much for that.
Yeah, for sure.
So you get married. Let's keep going.
Got married and it was, you know, it was broken before it started. So of course it fell apart. You know. So there was all sorts of ups and downs and all of that. And I remember this one day, I'll never forget it, where I just decided that was it. And anyone that knows me for a really long period of time will tell you that once I've made my mind up about something, it typically does happen. And so I basically, in June of 2017, I marched into my employer's office. I quit my job and indicated that on October the 1st, I was going to be starting a consultancy. And I came home with a 3-page letter that I wrote on my lunchtime that indicated that it was over and that he had 72 hours to kind of move his things. And my daughter and I left maybe 2 or 3 days after that. We went to PEI. We had the best vacation ever. And you could literally see not only from, you know, my daughter's perspective, but my perspective. She was 8 at the time. You could see the luggage that had been taken off our shoulders. And I say that because I think we're hiding a lot of things from our kids.
Yeah.
Because we would talk low at night and I wouldn't want to fight or, you know, all that stuff. Yeah. But I remember taking her for a walk about probably a week before I was going to ask him to leave. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, what would you think if so-and-so didn't live with us anymore? And she looked up at me with her most gorgeous green eyes and said, keep in mind, she's 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And she said to me, Mom, is it because he doesn't respect you?
Oh, honey.
That was it for me. I had no choice after that. Because if I kept moving forward in the marriage,
yeah,
I was showing my daughter how to partner.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the kind of partner that I wanted her to end up with. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, we'll just both take it as a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to stop the cycle right now.
Good for you. Wow. That must have been so hard.
It was a big financial loss to me. Uh-huh. But, you know, I remember somebody saying to me, and it rings so true, you know, I can always make more money, but I can never give that kid another childhood.
Yeah. And, you
and I think that's why
we just say that? I mean, my goodness.
So the trip to PEI was even more special because it was just her and I. It was almost like we were back together again. Yeah. Not that we had ever been apart, obviously, yeah. But it was just felt like almost this gal's trip that, you know, like, you know, 50-year-old women dream of. This is kind of felt like that kind of trip. So, and my mom is healthy and all that good stuff.
There's just one small piece that we've left unfinished for our listeners. Yeah. The last bit that we heard about your mom was that she had a stroke.
Yeah.
So she recovered from that stroke to be able to wedding, right?
She did. And now she is 81, feisty, better social life than I have. And lovely. So thanks for mentioning her. Yeah, she's great. And I'm just so grateful because there was a point in time, to be honest with you, that I thought I'm going to lose my parents around the same time. Like I really thought that was going to happen.
So at that time, you felt like your life was literally falling apart.
Oh yeah. And I just kept moving. I didn't, everybody's like, oh, did you take time off? I didn't take a minute off. I kept moving. And that's just, and I'm not saying that to look heroic or to look better than or anything like that. But I think I was afraid that if I did stop, I may never start again.
Stopped, you'd never start again, that would be it. So I have also lived through heaviness like that, as you know. And I'm curious, and I know many people who listen to this podcast can also resonate. So what do you think at that time your superpower was to help you change the dynamic and to make a shift? What was it that was available to you when everything else seemed lost?
It's my kid. Like I had to keep going. Single mom, single parents, there's no choice, right? There's no choice. So I think the superpower was the 8-year-old with the big, beautiful green eyes, kind of knowing that I'm modeling behavior for her. Not only modeling behavior regarding relationships, but modeling behavior regarding resiliency, modeling behavior regarding work ethic, modeling behavior around reinventing yourself, and that we all have to reinvent ourselves at some point. We don't talk about it, but there are, there's like four or five versions of Sam LaPrade, and if there wasn't, then I would still be wearing, neon green and listening to Madonna. You know what I mean? So
That's right.
there has to be evolutions of people, and sometimes you're forced to do it, and you teach people how to treat you. And once you learn some of these lessons, then it becomes you become a better version of yourself. I am a much better version. And here's what's so funny about it, and my friends will all tell you this. He wouldn't have even gotten a second date with me now. The Sam LaPrade of today, he wouldn't have even gotten a second date. Because I'm so, and it's not that it's because I'm jaded or anything, but it's I absolutely put up with no crap. I just don't. So it's really like, and even in my friendships and in my work environment, I literally have no time for no games. It's a game-free zone for me. I have no time for it. I'm too busy. I've got too much I want to accomplish. So it's basically been, it's been a roller coaster. There's been some moments for sure that that friends have stepped in to see me through some very dark moments, and my parents. There's been fundamental things that have happened in my life, and so much of it now, has lined up, but it's not all me. There's been a lot of people involved.
The other thing while you were talking that occurred to me is that you're modeling now self-respect, modeling dignity and power. You are standing firmly and solidly, is that a word, in your power now, which just is somewhere that I wish we could just wave a magic wand and give it to everybody, because it is such a transformative experience to emerge out of the ashes like that.
I think at the same time, the battle scars are what makes it sort of special, right? Everybody has their own story. So, battle scars that I've had over this time has also helped me with my clients who deal with intimate partner violence, right? Writing stories for them. It helps me be more compassionate in my work. It helps me be way more compassionate on the air. So all of that stuff has led to it. It's led to, as Kimberly, it's led to, many speaking engagements around the world. I mean, so would I give it up? I wouldn't give it up. And so I think everybody has to kind of go through their thing. And when you're going through it, you're mad. You're really mad that you have to go through your thing. But at the end of it, yeah, you gotta walk the walk.
it can feel hopeless when you're in the middle of it.
100%.
But for those who don't know you, where are you today? And you mentioned just a little bit of it, but, you know, like, now you're this bright light.
Thank you.
These amazing things.
You know, in 2017, I started the consultancy, and I just happened to be kind of driving down the road one day, and I thought, I thought of an idea about 10 years ago, and I'm going to see if I can kind of bring that idea up. And once again, people just intersecting in your lives. I was coming back from speaking in Toronto, and somebody happened to get on a train that I knew from my radio days. And I said to him, I've got an idea. And it was an idea that ended up becoming An Hour to Give, which is a show that focuses on philanthropy. And, you know, the show has been very, very successful. We're just about going to be experiencing our fifth anniversary, which is, I can't even believe it. We've told literally thousands of stories of, you know, nonprofits and the people that they've impacted. And then that led to me filling in on summer holidays for the talk show hosts. And that led to me being offered my own show daily. So I'm on City News 101.1 here in Ottawa.
City 101.1. Alexa, please play City.
Exactly. Exactly.
Anybody can listen.
Yeah. Exactly, which is fantastic. So I'm on every day and, you know, get to tell the stories. I really did put a big focus on, you know, sort of shining a spot where not a lot of people were, mental health and domestic violence and very, very, you know, tough topics. But yet I cover, you know, politics, and I'll cover, you know, local business stories. And so it's kind of potpourri for me, for sure.
I have to tell you that in high school, this is not on my resume, but one of my very first jobs was doing the midnight to 6 a.m. shift at EK Radio. In Cranbrook, BC. I had the whole radio station to myself, and it was back in the days where I had to play so much Canadian content, but I had two turntables and we were using records.
Oh my god, that
news tape would come through, and I got to just pick what I read on the news. Yeah. I don't know what the management was thinking, giving the 17-year-old kid
I love it.
It was fun. So you mentioned, you know, I should tell my guests that we should have like a signal, a safe word or something if I go too far. But you mentioned the divorce was financially devastating, and divorce can be financially devastating. I feel like you and I are living our best, most abundant life now.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Because, yeah. You know, for me, I mean, like I said, you know, it was, you know, I can always make more money. I mean, my portfolio of work, and that's Paul Nazareth has got me to call it portfolio of work. And I'm going to scoop that term from him
because Paul
shared it with me. But, you know, because I do combine my daily radio show with Griffin Fundraising Analytics, and then I've got, you know, my strategy clients. And then, as you mentioned, I do a lot of keynoting, a lot of hosting. And, you know, I'm the director of development for a national foundation as well. So I manage all of these pieces. I look a little puzzle every single day that I put together. And that, of course, has come with the financial reward as well. So I did take a hit. I'm being rewarded now. And I'm grateful for it.
So I have two questions left. If someone listening to this podcast right now feels like their world has fallen apart and they're in the depths of despair, what would you want them to know?
I'd want them to know that it can get better, and it's not going to be easy. And I will say, not that every day now is rosy and you know, every day has its own feel. So, you know, but to keep going and to lean on people, this is what community is all about. The other thing I will say, because this was very, very true for me, is I very quickly figured out who were my true friends.
Yeah.
So when you lean on people and they stand taller because you're leaning, that's your peeps.
Mm-hmm.
And you may only have one. And if you have one or none, there are so many resources as well. Lean on things like the distress centers, lean on the call-in opportunities. Lean on a therapist, lean on somebody, find somebody that you can share your story with, that it's going to be safe with.
Mm-hmm.
Only tell your true story with people that it's going to be safe with too. So it does get better. And you know, try to find humor. I used to try and find humor in anything I could. And I do stand-up comedy, as you know now. And a big part of my stand-up is talking about this crazy thing I went through, because it is ridiculous. And part of my healing through it all has been the fact that there's some really funny stuff that's come out of it. And when you, you know, like, you know, I always say to people when I'm doing stand-up, I'll say, you know, now I'm both an importer and an exporter, you know, because he was from Australia. But so there are moments where if you can find any humor in anything, or, you know, find the good. And I know it sounds a bit chintzy, you know, people say it all the time, you know, think of three things you're grateful for every day. And whether that means the fact that, you know, you've got, you know, pajamas and a hot cup of soup, whatever it is, doesn't matter what they are.
Yeah.
Find the gratitude.
When my husband left me, I woke up every morning and the only thing I could feel grateful for was the fact that I was breathing. And I would start, and that three things you're grateful for every single day, it works. Because if you do that intentionally, you end up with more and more and more and more things to be grateful for. And the other thing that you said that I really want to highlight is share your story in a safe place.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's power through letting it out, through saying it out loud, isn't there? So last question, if we were to end this conversation right now, what would be left unsaid?
What would be left unsaid? I think the power of, you know, the power of letting things happen. Some things were very uncomfortable for me. Like I would get a call from, you know, somebody, and they'd be like, can you do this work for me? And I'm like, okay, like I haven't done that work for 10 years, but I would be like, if this is happening, people are wanting to engage with me, be uncomfortable, get in there. And so I would do all my research, be prepared for them, and then produce it. And so I think part of it is just and I think we see this a lot with women. You know, if you see a job description, women feel like they have to have all the things ticked. Mm-hmm. Men look at the job description, they think, I've got that one thing, and they apply. Mm-hmm. It's just a sense, you know, something in our brain where we think we've got to be good at it all. I'm not good at everything I do, but I'm passionate about everything I do, and I'm willing to learn, never stop learning. I mean, that's another big thing for me, is all these books behind me, I know you can't see them listening to us, but you know, I'm always constantly trying to hone my craft, hone myself. I think that's a big thing. And for me is just, you know, just take the chances, take a chance on yourself. And speak to yourself as if you're a friend, because the stuff I used to say to myself wasn't very friendly, and I would never say them to you, or I would never say them to any of my friends. But that internal dialogue can definitely run a gamut on you. So make sure that, you know, you're speaking as kindly to yourself as you would a friend.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being here, and thank you for just thank you, Sam. It's so
nice to you
and reconnect. And
that's fun.
Very generous of you to spend a little time in the hub. So I appreciate you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Don't tell everybody else, but this was the most fun I had all day. So
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right.
As Sam said, everybody has their story. Sam, thank you for sharing yours. I know that it will help a lot of people who are going through something very similar. Folks, thank you for spending time here. Please remember to share this podcast and to invite others in. Let's keep building community and connection through candid conversation. See you next time.